Rubber Ducky, you're the one.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymy Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, trash in the ocean. Welcome and thanks for joining us. So thanks to the anonymous member of the JMU community, we don't know who you are because we just put a board in the hallway and said, please write down some suggestions for topics. And someone offered trash in the ocean as a topic they would like to see covered on the podcast. So that's what we're going to talk about today, as well as introduce the topic of environmental justice. Hello, Ben.
Well, hi there, Tymy.
Have you heard of the Pacific Trash Vortex?
I've heard of something called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Is that the same thing?
Yes. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch, as it's also called, is a large collection of marine debris in the North Pacific Ocean. It's basically patches of spinning garbage that are sort of stuck and bounded by ocean currents.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of that. But what's the difference between a patch and a vortex? So what is a vortex? Like, as you know, I'm a big Star Trek fan.
I do.
And the Enterprise is constantly getting caught in some kind of vortex. Captain, we're caught in a special vortex. So what is a vortex?
Okay. So the way that it works as a vortex is that, okay, say I'm on the coast of California and I toss in a plastic bottle. The current could take it south to Mexico and then it might catch a current in the Pacific. Now, if it moves all the way off the coast of Japan, then it could travel north, and the vortex eventually draws it in with those rotating ocean currents into its garbage patch.
Okay, so it's kind of like a big whirlpool that kind of like sucks and rotates things in.
Correct.
And it's big, too.
It is big.
Twice the size of Texas big.
Yes.
And so it's between the west coast of California and Hawaii, and it almost stretches that far.
Huge.
And I've heard this before, that you can see it from space.
Yes.
But I looked it up and that's a myth. You cannot see the Great Pacific Garbage Patch / Vortex from space. While it's big, it's not like an island, or it's not so dense that it would be visible from space.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that was a myth. See, we learn something new every day. So, it's not visible from space. Ocean plastics are by far the largest component of it, and they contribute as much as 80 to 95% of global marine debris. Plastics, as our listeners know, are synthetic materials that do not biodegrade. So the result is they just break down into smaller pieces of microplastics, and that's a huge portion of this patch, and it's not visible to the naked eye.
So microplastics, what does that mean? That's just when big pieces of plastic, they break apart, but they don't break down?
Correct.
Okay. So other than plastic and microplastic, what are other types of trash found in the ocean or in the vortex?
So when scientists use the terms marine debris, they are typically referring to man-made trash. So some of this is land-based and just ends up in our oceans, like plastic bags and bottles. But there are other things that are discarded, such as fishing nets. There are a lot of fishing nets, and abandoned vessels can end up in our waterways. And even the pandemic has affected this, because there's a lot of pandemic-related trash items, such as masks, washing up on beaches. There's also the deliberate disposal of waste in the sea, called ocean dumping. But sometimes there are accidental spills as well, including the most famous rubber ducks and also Lego pieces.
Okay. Rubber ducks and Lego pieces. That sounds like Sesame Street. Like, rubber ducky, you're the one. You make bath time lots of fun.
I didn't remember the next line.
But you should not end up in the ocean.
Correct. Yeah.
So you said waste and dumping. Like, are you talking about like oil or like human waste, or what kind of like dumping of waste?
Well, both, actually. Of course, there are oil spills, but sewers that aren't working well, that human waste can end up in our waterways as well. All kinds of garbage basically end up in the oceans that shouldn't be there, and this threatens our marine ecosystems. Although we're not the only country who has done this, even the U.S. military has dumped unused weapons and ammunition in the ocean, chemical weapons even.
Oh, speaking of that, I've heard that the military trained like dolphins and whales to retrieve like torpedoes and use weapons. So I was wondering if this was a myth or not.
Okay.
And I actually looked it up and it's true.
Oh.
So Project Deep Ops in 1969, the military trained two killer whales, Ahab and Ishmael.
Of course, called that Ahab and Ishmael.
Moby Dick. And two pilot whales, Pip and Morgan, to retrieve torpedoes, experimental weapons and casings and the like. But that only lasted until 1971. So they trained them and, you know, they did like some open ocean retrievals, and apparently a couple of the pilot whales died, and the killer whales, I think, just eventually like swam off and didn't come back. So I think that ended in 1971. But speaking of military dumping weapons in the ocean and animals, I'm sure that all of these garbages and plastics and trash in the ocean is harmful to our fine flippered friends.
Yes, correct. I just have this image of the dolphin or whale just like leaving, being like, I'm done with this. yes, marine debris can injure or kill marine and coastal wildlife. The harmful effects include everything from like damaging and degrading habitats, interfering with navigational safety, so it makes it difficult and dangerous for boats to get through. Economic loss to fishing industries, maritime industries, it degrades the quality of life in coastal communities and threatens our health and safety. So ships have been deliberately sunk to create artificial reefs. So not everything that ends up in the marine environment is harmful. But marine animals ingest plastic debris, which can be harmful to them, and it can also be harmful to us because it contaminates our food chain. So plastics broken down through photodegradation leach chemicals into the marine environment, harming both sea life and humans. But these negative effects and impacts are not equally distributed.
Wait, back up a second. You said photo what?
Degradation.
What does that mean? What is that? What is photodegradation?
So just think heat and sun. When you see BPA free on plastic containers, it's because that's one of the chemicals that the heat and sun breaks down and it leaches into our food supply and it's bad. Mm.
So like plastic, like a plastic water bottle floating in the ocean, the sun hits it and starts breaking it down, but it doesn't disintegrate and it just turns into microplastics.
Correct.
Oh gosh, you learned
something. You've got it. Nice. Yay.
So you also said that the negative impacts are not equally distributed. Does that mean that trash affects some people or some places worse than others?
Yeah, so this is where we get to introduce our justice topic. And so the idea of environmental justice developed out of a concern for the way that the negative harms that result from pollution, but also hazardous waste disposal, impacts historically disadvantaged communities, which includes Black communities. So this was a response in the 1980s to charges of environmental racism because, for example, Superfund sites are located in low-income or disadvantaged communities. Superfund sites.
I'm assuming that's fund.
Fund.
Right.
Not, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Does it sound like I'm saying Superfund sites?
Yeah, it did for a second. Like that sound, that doesn't. What is a Superfund site?
Yeah, they're not places where you go and have fun.
Oh, yeah,
they're just waste disposal. Mm. So one of the communities close to where I grew up actually had a Superfund site. So as an area of study, back to environmental justice, this has expanded to include other types of harm, including that of climate change. So environmental harms on oceans and other waterways is not something that's studied as much. But, you know, this is important because people rely on this for survival. Environmental justice also includes the participation of people who are in these vulnerable situations in the decision-making processes about ways to mitigate environmental harms because they're often not included. It's affluent communities, wealthy communities. They're the ones that are making the decisions about this stuff. Environmental justice also moved away from just assigning blame to actors to evaluating the larger social dynamics of the production and distribution of environmental degradation. Another way to think about this is that recycling by us individuals is not going to solve the problem of global markets. And this is related to two other justice concepts relevant to this discussion of ocean trash, and that's procedural and distributive justice. Procedural justice is concerned with the processes of resolving disputes and whether they're fair and transparent, but also, as I mentioned, this right to participate in the decision-making process. So the right of everyone to do so. The communities who are directly impacted by marine debris and pollution should be able to participate and contribute to solutions. On the other hand, distributive justice refers to something I also mentioned before, the fact that environmental harms are not distributed equally to everyone. Vulnerable populations feel the brunt of these effects because affluent communities can avoid them.
Right. So distributive justice is about how we distribute resources or how Correct. The hardships of society are distributed or are shared.
Yes.
So if poor communities are the ones who are suffering the most from ocean trash, you're talking about vulnerable poor communities.
Yes.
That's distributively unjust.
Correct.
Where the burden and the suffering and the problem of trash is most heavily felt in poor communities.
Yes.
How's that happening? Is trash being dumped in poor communities, or are communities with more resources, more wealth, able to pick up their trash, or
let's just say all of the above.
All of the above. Okay.
So these issues have also been referred to by marine biologist Ayana Elizabeth Johnson as ocean justice. So she's the founder and the CEO of a consulting group and think tank for coastal cities. And she describes ocean justice as this place or intersection between ocean conservation and issues of social equity and justice. Because we have to think about these questions. Who suffers the most from flooding and pollution, for example? But also who benefits from conservation measures. So, you know, sort of back to your question here, historically marginalized groups that rely on subsistence harvesting or small-scale fisheries and
subsistence harvesting? Is that like,
oh, yeah.
Like small fishing villages, small fishing communities?
Yeah, they rely on it for their mm-hmm. food source. So when we say subsistence harvesting, this is a food source that feeds a village, feeds a community.
So you pollute and kills the fish.
Yes.
And then these communities that basically survive from the fish in the ocean are really in hard times then because the fish yeah. are... Okay, gotcha.
Correct. Low-income nations also are the most impacted. So when you have chemical and biological contamination in the ocean, it makes pre-existing inequalities worse, especially if you're contaminating food sources. The worst social environmental impacts and public health effects of pollution are often experienced and absorbed by indigenous people, people of color, and women. This is what the research tells us.
So who do we blame for trash in the ocean? do we blame people? You talked about kind of communities, poor country. Do we blame countries? I saw this documentary on Netflix a while ago, and it basically said that the majority of the plastic in the ocean is from like discarded nets from commercial fishing,
yes.
like these major massive fishing operations, in that, you know, just people who recycled their plastic, would not have a major dent on trash in the ocean unless we did something about like these massive fishing nets. So
Yes, that's who we blame. I mentioned earlier, we can't recycle our way out of this, and it's a global market issue. So environmental justice issues are difficult to address sometimes because it is about who is responsible both for the act, but then how do we hold them accountable? So we can create international laws together in this. To govern this, we did and do, but they tend to lack enforcement, and also countries like the United States can choose to ignore them. So domestic laws and regulations are better in this regard, but then you can have issues in some nations with corruption and procedural injustice. So yes, we need to hold these large-scale industries also accountable for their contributions. Wealthy nations are also able to economically exploit vulnerable countries while at the same time avoiding any accountability unless we use international law to protect these more vulnerable nations. But then the question of who is responsible is easy to shift around when you're looking at multiple points in a global supply chain. Is it the government's responsibility? Is it the corporation's responsibility? It's a very complicated issue to discuss in 30 minutes or less.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I feel like I've learned a lot today already, so maybe we can do something else about this topic in the future.
Yes.
So I guess kind of thinking about what we might do in the future and wrapping things up, what can we do about trash in the ocean?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of ocean conservation around plastic pollution, and we'll link to some of those organizations in the show notes for people listening who want to learn more and also want to find a way to participate, a call to action. These include nonprofits as well as organizations such as the United Nations, which has estimated that by 2050, there will be more plastic in the ocean than fish if we don't take measures to deal with it now.
Gosh.
So recommendations include things like governments need to expand their monitoring of plastic waste. They need to also spend money to study the health impacts and also spend money to invest in managing plastic waste. It's also on governments to enforce bans on single-use plastics because we cannot recycle our way out of this problem.
Single-use plastics, is that like straws, Ziploc baggies?
Yes. Lots of water bottles.
Oh, water bottles. Well, I do have a metal water bottle. I don't use plastic water bottles, but I do use straws and Ziploc baggies. So I've got some.
You're a culprit.
Yeah, I've got some work to do.
Okay.
One other thing that I wanted to talk about, we're talking about like single-use plastics, is I've seen this Instagram video of these conservationists like pulling a straw out of a sea turtle's like nose.
Yeah,
I don't know if
they
have noses or blow. It was awful.
It's very sad.
Yeah, it really makes me think twice about using straws. But
yeah,
when we think about those like
the alternative.
Yeah, biodegradable straws.
Yes.
They're pretty gross.
Yeah, some of them, the paper ones, they break down in your drink. But I have a reusable metal straw, for example, that I use in the mornings for my smoothie.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I've ordered drinks out in a couple of places where they'll put like a piece of pasta or maybe like a sweet drink and like a candy swizzle straw.
Oh, nice.
But those things kind of get soggy and gross too after you take a few sips. So,
yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I need to work on reducing my use of straw or maybe get a metal straw.
Yes, get a metal straw.
In Ziploc baggies.
So there is hope because I would say that this just happened over the past weekend. The United Nations finalized a treaty that they have been working on for almost 20 years that helps identify responsibility in protecting our oceans, since so much of it lies beyond national borders and it really does require like international cooperation. So what this treaty would allow is nations to establish protected marine zones that are currently in danger from pollution, but also climate change and global trade. And they would be able to monitor those zones as well as, you know, deal with the enforcement issue, which is a big question. So we'll see where that goes. It might be a while for it to be implemented.
Okay. Sounds like a move in the right direction.
Yes. Let's hope.
All right, well, to close our show, it's our Minute to Spin It, where we each give our 30-second takeaway from the show. So, Tommy, in just a minute, what's your spin?
Plastic is not fantastic. Ben, what's your spin?
Well, I'm going to plagiarize from Woodsy Owl and say, give a hoot, don't pollute. And also, come on, science, we need to invent a good, environmentally friendly straw.
True. This podcast is sponsored by the Gandhi Center at JMU. See the show notes for links to articles and studies discussed on the podcast. Please help us decide on what other justice topics to cover by sending suggestions to our email at gandhicenter@jmu.edu or DM us on Instagram at gandhicenterjmu. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.